And we're off. Good morning, good day, whatever time of day you're watching or listening to this. Thank you for joining in and keeping your practice alive and strong. I'm proud of you. Namo myoho renge kyo. I'm in a good mood. Despite we're having some issues with a vendor right now, we got damaged material, and you know there's always a saga about replacing. And anyway, so that's going on, and I have goop on my glasses, and we will continue now with the selection of the time. We're going to deal in this part with an interesting, it's an interesting dialogue happening in this letter that, you know, maybe at first glance as you're reading through it, might not jump out at you. I have something stubborn on here. But it has to do with the issue of Chikaku's dream. And, you know, in the history of Buddhism, because the expedient means of Buddhism are taught in different countries, different parts of countries, different cultures are encountered, there's a lot of different sources of folklore and, you know, old stories and teachings from other camps and so forth that Buddhism makes use of in the expedient means, right? So in this case, boy, I'm having a problem this morning. Okay. In this case, we're dealing with Chikaku's dream of shooting an arrow at the sun, and somehow he justifies all of his commentaries based on that dream as having somehow giving him the stamp of approval for his commentaries. We'll get to the particulars here, but I think, you know, my first impression on reading about this dream was a furrowed brow, as I'm exampling right now. because, you know, in almost all of the history of Buddhism, I mean, almost 3,000 years, and certainly in Nichiren's letters, we see these references to the sun and moon all the time. And in every case, in Buddhism anyway, the reference to the sun and moon are as protector, or the symbolism of, you know, the vast truth or nature is beyond just our own human experience, but this huge universal sign. It's always the symbolism of the moon is like there's an actual moon, which is a wonder. But the reflection of the moon in a lake is simply a reflection. And if you don't have you know, a proper understanding of whatever it is under discussion, then it's like you're looking at the reflection of the moon on the water and thinking that that is the moon. Like you hear, I think we heard recently about monkeys grabbing at the moon in the water, like they could grab the reflection, right? The sun is always this life-giving thing, the source of energy. You know, whenever the sun is hidden behind an eclipse, that's a very auspicious event. The sun and the moon are almost revered objects, right? And they're used constantly as exemplar. So when you read in this dream about Jikaku and how he had this dream that he shot an arrow at the sun and the sun went tumbling and tumbling, I thought, I was a little shocked when I read that. I thought, wow, Chikaku, you must fear for your life. And now it's like you shot the Buddha himself and you went tumbling. You destroyed this magnificent source of life and enlightenment and light, you know, and clarity and everything which is our goal in Buddhism is this clarity of the Buddha mind, right? So when I read that, I thought, wow, that must have really changed Chikaku's course. But somehow, history records that he saw this as an auspicious event. Yeah, I agree. That validated all of his commentaries. And I did one of those, huh? I don't know if I would have done that in 13th century Japan, but I just couldn't understand how he used this as validation. So, Nichiren goes at it his own way and doesn't point out what I'm pointing out to you. But I'm doing this because I think that underneath the rhetoric that he uses, you might see it the way I just described it. And for whatever it is, whether it's convention or Nichiren's style, he makes a powerful argument. But he kind of leaves a lot unsaid. And he takes one of those positions where he says, I could say a lot about this, but I mean, it's just obvious. But he doesn't say why it's obvious. He does doctrinally, but it's like it's beneath him to go, So being as I am a blabbermouth, I'll say the unsaid. I'm not afraid to say it. But anyway, I'll read through this and see if you don't have the same sense of this. I'm curious if you have a different view. I'd like to see that in the comments. Please let me know what your thoughts are. So here we go. We continue. But perhaps he felt that the relative worth of the Tendai and the true word schools was still a matter of doubt. Or perhaps he hoped to dispel the misgivings of others. In any event, the biography of the great teacher Jikaku states as follows. Quote, after the great teacher had completed writing his commentaries on the two sutras and thus accomplished his aim, he wondered to himself whether or not his commentaries conformed to the will of the Buddha. It's a good doubt to have, right? For he believed that if he did not conform to the Buddha's will, they should never be widely circulated in the world. These are just my opinions and what I think I've discovered, but maybe I should just keep it to myself and continue to practice until either I could rewrite this or whatever, maybe get rid of it. He therefore placed the commentaries before the image of the Buddha and determined to spend 7 days and 7 nights earnestly praying, meditating, and endeavoring to make clear the validity of his purpose. On the fifth day, early in the morning at the time of the fifth watch, he dreamed that it was high noon and that the sun was shining in the sky. Looking up, he took a bow and shot an arrow at it. The arrow struck the sun, which immediately began to roll over and over. After he woke from his dream, he realized that his views were profoundly in accord with the will of the Buddha. This is where I went, really? And he determined to transmit his commentaries to the future ages. End quote. This is from his biography, okay? I'm still mystified. Anyway, so Nichiren continues. While the great teacher Jikaku was in Japan, he made a thorough study of the teachings of both Dengyo and Kobo. Dengyo being the Tendai school with the new ordination platform that he was establishing for immediate enlightenment, the Lotus Sutra based, right? And Kobo, who was working with a mixture of documents going back to Shanwu Wei and the true word advocates of the Mahavarachana and the way that they distorted things to lower the status of the Lotus Sutra, like it's too haughty, let's stick to these mudras and mantras. And so he studied all of that, spent a period of 10 years in China studying under the distinguished monks, 8 distinguished monks, including the Tripitaka master Pao Hui of southern India, learning all the loftiest and most secret doctrines, and on this basis he completed his commentaries on the two sutras, Mahavacharana versus Lotus Sutra. In addition, he meditated to the images of the Buddha and awoke from dreaming that he had seen the arrow of wisdom strike the sun of the middle way. Which still, even if you say it that way, I mean, an arrow isn't like petting a dog. An arrow is a weapon of death. And you shoot it at the middle way. What are you saying? You're shooting the middle way. You're killing it off, right? So great was his joy. He requested Emperor Nimyo to issue an edict acknowledging Mount Hiei as a center of the true word practice. This makes no sense to me, but I'll read on. This is Nichiren showing evidence that what's going on here, right? Though he was the chief monk of the Tendai school, he virtually became a true word prelate, declaring that the three true word sutras were the works that would ensure peace and protection of the nation. It has now been more than 400 years since he spread the doctrine. 400 years, things now have become tradition, like I've said before. They're no longer critical teachings. They're repeated memes and traditions. So people aren't really analyzing what they're doing. They're just doing it rote. The eminent leaders who have accepted them are as numerous as rice and hemp seedlings, and the fervent believers who have embraced them are as plentiful as bamboo plants and rushes. So these teachings have now been inculcated into the culture, right? So now Nichiren, as he's explaining this, says, as a result of all the temples established throughout Japan by Emperor Kamu and the great teacher Dengyo, there is not one that has not become a propagator of the true word doctrine. They've all been, turned toward this fallacy. Both courtiers and warriors alike invite true word monks to attend to their religious needs, look up to them as their teachers, confer offices upon them, and place them in charge of temples. And in the eye-opening ceremony carried out at the consecration of wooden and painted Buddhist images, the monks of all the eight schools of Buddhism now use the mudras and mantras of the Thus Come One Mahavacharana and the world-honored one Buddha Eye! Exclamation point. It's like this has gotten totally ritualistic mysticism. They've totally gone off the rails. This isn't the Buddha's teaching. Question. When it comes to those who maintain that the Lotus Sutra is superior to the true word teachings, should they try to make use of these commentaries by Chikaku, or should they reject them? Almost seems like a dumb question, doesn't it? Answer. Shakyamuni Buddha laid down a rule for future conduct when he said that we, quote, should rely on the law and not upon persons. But see, the problem with 400-year-old traditions is that there's no person to rely on. There's just this rhetoric, right, that keeps getting compounded and followed, compounded and followed. And the people lose sight of the fact that what they're studying came from a person, not the Buddhist teachings. This is an opinion that Chikaku wrote. They're commentaries. And so we have to be, as Buddha said, we have to study broadly. So study the commentaries, see what he has to say, but only within the context of the whole, the greater collection of teachings, right? Because then his mistake will be obvious. But if all you do is study the mistake, you don't know. You don't know that it's incorrect, right? Until you study the whole. Then it becomes obvious. So this is the problem when you have inculcated traditional information. And once again, I have to point out, this is one of the main reasons I point this out all the time, Buddhism is a self-initiated practice. It is a self-created practice. Each one of us will come to our realizations independently. We can work as a sangha to help each other do just that. But you cannot, should not, take rote the word of a person. They may be very helpful in your path, but if you're not making the personal effort to understand clearly, then you're a passenger. You're not driving your practice. You're just floating along. And that is not the way to practice Buddhism, period. Bodhisattva Nagarjuna says that one should rely on treatises that are of strong resolve to the sutras, but not rely on those that distort the sutras. Tendai states, quote, that which accords with the sutras is to be written down and made available, but put no resolve in anything that in word or meaning fails to do so, end quote. And the great teacher Dengyo, more contemporary to his time, says, quote, depend upon the teachings of the Buddha and do not put resolve in traditions handed down orally or written. So this is probably the most specific statement regarding Jikaku, because the proponents of 400 years of misinterpretation of Jikaku's interpretation of true word doctrine is being bandied about as an independent study of Buddhism, not a study of the Buddha's words. So it's important to, are you following the sutras, or are you following one man's commentaries on the sutras? You know, that's not to say all commentaries are bogus. It is to say, again, that it needs to know its proper place as far as study. Know the commentaries, but know them in reference to what they are commentating about. You may find you have a different commentary. All of us do, because we find our own path. Nichiren continues, if one attends to such statements in the sutras, treatises, and commentaries, then one should not make dreams a basis for evaluating the Buddha's teachings. Rather, one should pay particular attention to those sutras and treatises that make clear the relative superiority of the Lotus Sutra and the Mahavajrayana Sutra. So if the sutras, Buddha's words, make it clear that the Lotus Sutra is the teaching, how can you then come along and say, but this other teaching, that's the real one? You're basically arguing with Shakyamuni about his own enlightenment. How silly, how crazy is that? And that, by the way, really points out the arrow shooting at the sun and the sun rolling over and over and over, because that's what he's doing. As for the assertion, Nichiren continues, that the eye-opening ceremony for wooden and painted images cannot be carried out without the use of true word mudras and mantras, this is the sheerest nonsense. And it's pretty strong words, right? Are we to suppose that before the true word school appeared on the scene, wooden and painted Buddhist images could not be consecrated? And what would we be doing for a couple thousand years here? Where is everyone just doing it wrong until you figured out that you need to hold your hand this way or that way and blah, 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 in order to consecrate? This is pre-mandala of Gohonzon, right? So rather than mandala, they use consecrated images of Buddha or painted images or statues in order to focus on their practice. That's all been superseded now by this mandala, which is universal, and it isn't based on aesthetics or any other delusional attachments of samsara, right? In the period, he continues, before the appearance of the True Word School, there were wooden and painted images in India, China, and Japan that walked or about or preached the teachings or spoke aloud. It would rather appear that since people have begun to use the True Word mudras and mantras in consecrating the Buddha images, the effectiveness of the ceremony has been completely lost. Why does he say this? Because now the object of worship has become this earthly samsaric delusion of the position of hands, the position, the dance, if you will, rather than the teaching. That is always the core. When we chant to Gohonzon, we're not chanting to a scroll, a piece of paper, right? We've talked about this before. We're invoking enlightenment itself. We're invoking our personal path and relationship with Buddha, right? These are just tools to get our mind away from our distractions of earthly matters, our attachments. Well, how can you get away from your attachments if you're making signs and other things with your hands? You can't let go of your humanness, your samsaric identity. So that blocks your way to a clear understanding of the life process, right? If the goal of Buddhism, as Shakyamuni stated it, was to cease the formations of our attachments so that we could then see clearly this entire process of life, then how are we relieving ourselves, liberating ourselves from these attachments if we're using our bodies and our hands and our symbols and our language and all this other stuff in order to get there? We'll never get there because we're too busy dancing and doing these things. We need to stop the monkey mind. We're not trying to eliminate our bodies. We're trying to eliminate our various distractions and attachments supporting the body, because it's just a vessel. We don't want to annihilate it, which is what some early teachings, Hinayana teachings, ended up going very nihilistic with this. That's not the goal. The goal is to live this life very well, so you can't get rid of this body because it's your vehicle for experiencing Buddhahood. But you need to stop focusing on its attachments if you're going to see clearly the path. Make sense? So Nichiren goes on. This is a generally acknowledged point. I would merely like to say that when it comes to determining the truth of the great teacher Chikaku's assertions, there is no need for me, Nichiren, to cite any outside evidence to refute them. So there it is, what I was saying earlier. He just goes, look, it's so obviously not Buddhism. I you know, just look at it. I don't have to explain it to you. He goes on, though, and says, we have only to examine Chikaku's own interpretations to understand the truth of the matter. Question, how do we come to understand it? Okay, answer. We understand it when we realize that the source of Chikaku's delusion was the dream that he had after he had written his commentaries asserting that the True Word teachings are superior to the Lotus Sutra. If his dream had been an auspicious one, then we would have to conclude that Chikaku was correct in claiming that the True Word teachings are superior. But can a dream of shooting the sun be called auspicious? I just wonder what the look on his face was when he wrote this. Just try to find anywhere in the 5,000 or 7,000 volumes of Buddhist scriptures or in the 3,000 and more volumes of non-Buddhist literature any evidence suggesting that to dream of shooting the sun is an auspicious occurrence. So he's a little fed up at this point, right? So he goes on. Let us look at a few pieces of evidence. King Ajatasattu dreamed that the moon was falling out of the sky. When he consulted his high minister, Jivaka, the latter said, quote, "This is a sign of the Buddha's passing," end quote. This is kind of what I was suggesting earlier. If the moon's falling from the sky, that's not a good thing. And when Sabhadra also dreamed that the sun was falling from the sky, he said to himself, "This is a sign of the Buddha's passing," end quote. Yeah. The sun is kind of important. Life would not exist without it. An analogy to the Buddha. If you dream that the sun's falling out of the sky, that is auspicious for the reason that it portends a disaster of some sort, right? It's like a warning shot. So forget falling from the sky. Let's shoot it and tumble it away. Oh, that's a good sign. What? In what universe is that a good sign? So Nichiren's pointing these out from the sutras and the folklore of the nations, right? This is, where does Jikaku get this idea? So when the Asuras fought with the Lord Chakra, they first of all shot arrows at the sun and moon. Well, there's a direct comparison, right? The Asuras are angry devils. And if they shoot the Lord Chakra, in other words, this omniscient pre-Buddhist Lord of the heavens, and they shoot the sun and moon, it's because they're at war and they're bringing disaster. The negative influence rulers, King Chie of the Xia dynasty and King Chao of the Yin dynasty in ancient China, are both said to have repeatedly shot arrows at the sun, and both destroyed themselves and brought an end to their dynasties. So if you're looking for comparative dreams, everything ends in disaster. Lady Maya, he continues, dreamed that she conceived of the sun and thereafter gave birth to Prince Siddhartha, who in time became Buddha Shakyamuni. For this reason, the Buddha's name as a child was Sunseed. Japan, or Nihon, means source of the sun, is so called because it is the land of the sun goddess. In light of these examples, Jikaku's dream must mean that he used his two commentaries as arrows to shoot at the sun goddess, the great teacher Dengyo, Shakyamuni Buddha, and the Lotus Sutra. Ta-da! I, Nichiren, am an ignorant man, and I know nothing about the sutras and treatises. But I do know this much. Anyone who would conclude from such a dream that the true words teachings are superior to the Lotus Sutra will surely, in his present life, destroy his nation and ruin his family, and after his death will fall into the Avicii hell. So, no uncertain terms now. We, in fact, have a piece of evidence to settle the matter. If, when Japan and the Mongol forces engaged in combat, the meditations of the True Word monks had proved effective and Japan had won on that account, they might be persuaded that the True Word school is worthy of respect. But, at the time of the Jokyu disturbance, though a considerable number of True Word monks prayed for the victory of the imperial forces and invoked curses on the forces of the Kamakura shogunate, the leader of the latter, the acting administrator, Hojo Yoshitoki, emerged victorious. As a result, the retired emperor Gotoba was exiled to the province of Oki, and his sons were exiled to the island of Sado to another province. Such was the effect of the True Word prayers for victory. In the end, the True Word prayers were like the cries of the fox that give him away, and the curses, as the Lotus Sutra says, quote, rebound upon the originator. The 3,000 monks of Mount Hiei were also attacked by the Kamakura troops and forced to submit. Now the Kamakura government is at the height of power. Therefore, the true word monks of Toji, Mount Hiei, Onjoji, and the seven major temples of Nara, along with those monks of the Lotus School who have forgotten the teachings of their own school and instead slander the law, have all made their way east to the Kanto region, where they bow their heads, bend their knees, and seek in various ways to win over the hearts of the warriors. They are in turn assigned positions as superintendents or chief officials of various temples and mountain monasteries, where they proceed to follow the same negative influence doctrines that earlier brought about the downfall of the imperial forces, using them to pray for the peace and safety of the nation. So to Nichiren, it's obvious that none of what they're doing is even functioning in a positive way. I mean, give it up, right? Let's see where we are time-wise. Oh, we're good. The shogun and his family, he continues, along with the samurai who are in their service, very likely believe that as a result of such prayers, meditations, the nation will actually become peaceful and secure. But it ain't happening, is it? But so long as they employ the services of monks who invite grave disaster by ignoring the Lotus Sutra, the nation will in fact face certain destruction. When I think of how pitiful it would be if the nation were to be destroyed, and how lamentable would be the loss of life involved, I feel that I must risk my own life in order to make the truth of the situation clear. If the ruler despises the security of the nation, if the ruler desires the security of the nation, he should question the manner in which things are proceeding and try to discern the truth for himself, right? But instead, all he does is listen to the calumnies of others and in one way or another treat me with animosity, I mean Nichiren. In past ages, when there were those who slandered the law, Brahma, Chakra, the gods of the sun and moon, the four heavenly kings, and the deities of the earth, all of whom have sworn to defend the Lotus Sutra, would look on with disapproval. But because there was no one to proclaim the matter aloud, they would be forgiving, as one would be with an only child who misbehaves, at times pretending not to notice such slander, at times administering a mild reproof. Now that I am present to make clear the matter, however, I can only be amazed that the ruler should continue to listen to persons who slander the law. Yet he does so, and on the contrary, even goes so far as to persecute the rare individual who attempts to enlighten him and rescue him from the error. Not for just 1 or 2 days, 1 or 2 months, or even 1 or 2 years, but for a number of years on end. Now, I have met with greater difficulties than the sticks and staves that Bodhisattva Never Disparaging was obliged to face, and have encountered more fearful opposition than the murderous acts inflicted on the monk Realization of Virtue. During this period, the two great kings, Brahma and Chakra, the gods of the sun and moon, the four heavenly kings, the gods of the stars, and the deities of the earth have manifested their anger in various ways and again have delivered reprimands. And yet the attacks on me have only worsened. Finally, heaven in its wisdom has made the situation known to the sages of neighboring countries, enlisting them to add to the reprimands, and has caused the great negative influence spirits to enter the nation and deceive the people's hearts, inciting them to rebel against their own rulers. So Japan's in a lot of civil war going on, and this goes on for a long time if you study the history of Japan. It is only reasonable to assume that, whether good or evil, the greater the portents, the greater will be the occurrences to follow. Now we have seen huge comets of a magnitude never known before in the 2,230 or more years since the Buddha's passing, and have experienced earthquakes such as never encountered before during that time. In China and Japan in the past, sages of outstanding wisdom and ability have from time to time appeared. You know, Tendai, Myalo. But none, as an ally of the Lotus Sutra, has faced such powerful enemies within his country as have I, Nichiren. From the facts presented before your very eyes, it should be apparent that Nichiren is the foremost person in the entire land of Jhampadvipa. In the 700 and more years since Buddhism was first introduced to Japan, there have been 5,000 or 7,000 volumes of sutra read and 8 or 10 schools propounded. The people of wisdom who have appeared have been as numerous as rice and hemp seedlings, and those who have spread the teachings widely have been plentiful as bamboo plants and rushes. And yet, of all the various Buddhas, there is none more highly revered and none whose name is more widely called upon than Buddha Amida. Again, a storied Buddha, not an actual enlightened person, but a placeholder and a personage made of Shakyamuni's mind, a teaching to help guide people to understand the way the mind works, the Buddha mind works, the human mind works in its path toward the Buddha mind. It is a tool, not an actual Buddha to be followed. Buddha is within it's our mental state we're trying to enlighten. Whenever there's deviations like this, people's attachments is like, well, that's the answer, so let's worship that. No, we don't worship in Buddhism. We invoke, we realize. There's this just human propensity toward externalizing everything. It's not just wrong, it's completely counter to the Buddha's teachings. This is why Nichiren is so infuriated, right? And like the sages and bodhisattvas before him, Dengyo, you know, Myaolo, Tendai, Nagarjuna, Vasubandhu, all throughout history, you have these scholars who stand up and go, hello, where are you people going? Get back on track. This is the history of Buddhism. But it always goes back to the initial teachings. And this is why we know the great value of the history of Buddhism is that it self-corrects. It self-corrects because sooner or later, it's the people who actualize the Buddha. Not something that comes from the right soup or plant or hand motion or, right? Okay. So this practice of invoking the name of Buddha Amida was advocated by Eshin in his work Essentials of Rebirth in the Pure Land. And as a result, 1/3 of the people of Japan became believers in the Nembutsu, the calling on the name of Amida. When Yokan wrote 10 conditions for rebirth in the Pure Land and the rituals of the assembly for rebirth in the Pure Land, 2/3 of all the people in this country became followers of the Nembutsu. But see, they're following the person. They're following these commentaries. They're not following the teachings of Buddha, of the actual Shakyamuni Buddha. See, it keeps happening. Because people like idols, don't they? He continues, and when Honen wrote the Nembutsu chosen above all, oh, he doesn't like Honen, then everyone alike in this nation became a Nembutsu devotee. Thus, those people who chant the name of Amida Buddha these days are by no means disciple of only one person. They've chosen several, right? This thing called the Nembutsu is a daimoku, or chant, based on the 2-volume meditation and Amida Sutras, which are provisional Mahayana Sutras. If the Daimoku of provisional Mahayana Sutra is widely propagated and spread abroad, it must be a prelude to to the propagation of the Daimoku of the true Mahayana Sutra, must it not? People who have a mind for such concerns should consider this matter carefully. If the provisional sutras are spread abroad, then the true sutra will surely be spread abroad. Right? It's just an ovation. If the Daimoku of the provisional sutras is spread abroad, then the Daimoku of the true sutra will also surely spread abroad. In all the 700 and more years from the time of Emperor Kimei to the present Emperor Go-Uda, such a thing has never been seen or heard of, namely, a wise man who urges others to chant Namu Myoho Rengekyo and who chants it himself. When the sun rises, the stars go into hiding. When a worthy king appears, foolish kings perish. When the true sutra is spread widely, the provisional sutras will cease to circulate. And when a man of wisdom chants Namu Myoho Rengekyo, those ignorant of it will follow after him as shadows follow a form and echoes follow a sound. There can be no room for doubt that I, Nichiren, am the foremost votary of the Lotus Sutra in all of Japan. Indeed, from this we may assume that even in China and India, throughout Jampadvipa, there is no one who can stand side by side with me. So this may sound like an egotistic statement, but if you take it in context of what he's talking about here, he is saying that he and his entourage, his disciples, his followers, represent the actual teachings of Buddha, and that these commentaries are statements of persons who are greedy for power and placement and ego, and represent teachings that are not commensurate with or in alignment with the teachings of Buddha. So if you're going to practice Buddhism, then you need to practice Buddha's teachings, not these erroneous persons. They all have opinions. Hooray for them. They don't seem to be working out, but aside from that, we shouldn't be putting our resolve in these people. Rather, we should put our resolve in the teachings. And why is that? Because through the teachings, we gain our own path and enlightenment to our Buddha realization. It always circles back to self. Self-responsibility, self-motivation, self-practice. Okay, we have another question. I think this is a good breaking point. Yeah, we've got far enough. As you know, I transcribe all of these. I lost my pen. Transcribe all of these videos into audio so that you can find all of this stuff. And I still have many more older ones to put on. I think maybe when I finish this particular letter, this Go Show, that will be the end of Volume 3. I might take a break and do... I've already mentioned something on the skandhas, the five aggregates. I pick and choose. I really would like your input on what are some just areas of Buddhism that you'd like some clarification on. And I'll try to make a few study videos on those matters. Your input is greatly appreciated. Otherwise, we'll just keep going on. We're getting closer and closer to finishing this Go Show. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your participation here. More of you are subscribing every day to this YouTube channel. And that is wonderful encouragement for me to continue doing these things. I want everything that I put up to be helpful. To support your practice and strengthen your knowledge and your practice, to come to your own insights and realize your Buddha. And this is why I ask again, if there are particular areas, don't be shy. Everybody has stuff that You know, a lot of reading, no matter how much you study, you see it only with your own eyes, and it's always helpful to get somebody else's take on it. So let me be that person for you, who can offer you my own take on the questions that you have, whatever it is about Buddhism, okay? And in the meantime, truly, truly, please take care of your health and safety, and the ones you love, your loved ones, and stay strong in your practice. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you so much. See you next time.